And here are your hosts, Shanae and Katrina.
Welcome, everybody, to our next episode of the Bookies Podcast. Katrina, unfortunately, couldn't be with us this morning, but I have a great new co-host or a great new author to interview, David P. Perlmutter. Welcome.
Invite. Good evening from London.
Oh, it's been crazy. Your daylight saving started last month. Ours ended yesterday. I tell you what, I had to count on my fingers and toes to get that right.
Thank God you got 10.
Oh, thank God I've got 10 and didn't go to 11. Anyway.
Or less.
That is true. Now, we're here today to talk about your career as an author, and you also have some other interesting side acts that you do as well.
I do indeed.
Do you want to keep us up to date with those?
Yeah, well, as you say, I'm an author. When did I start writing? About 10, well, mind you, time goes really quickly. It could be 12 years. About 10 years ago, I wrote my first book. And in fact, I just self-published my latest last week, which is, I think, book number 17. I've written a crime fiction trilogy. This is my latest. And in fact, it's on Amazon as three individual books and a box set. Plus now I've actually reread it many times, edited it, reworded it. And it's now one whole book. And I uploaded it on Amazon. And it just, as I said, just become published. And it's 721 pages and 100, just under 150,000 words. So I have put blood, guts, tears, heart and soul into this book. And fingers crossed it will pay dividends, because a lot of people would love to. I'm going to go on. You know me, I can talk for England.
Oh, world. That's okay. I talk for Australia.
Oh, there we go then. And so, oh yeah, so this book, I've put so much into it. And a lot of people would love it as a TV series. And when I was writing it, it's written in the first person. As I wrote it, and I acted out the scenes, read out loud the dialogue as I was doing it, I got really, really involved. And it's about an author. And it's partially true, actually, because there's elements of the author which is based on me. Not all of it, thankfully. He does murder a few people. But yeah, as I say, a lot of people love it as a TV series. So this is the news, and it's not even... I will be putting it on social media this week, is that I'm doing a fundraising campaign, and to raise funds to make a TV pilot, like a 60-minute TV pilot of the book. And I've got some great actors involved. Great actors.
Wow, that sounds interesting.
And director. So that will be going. So fingers crossed we can raise the money, like so many people use fundraising campaigns.
Is that like crowdfunding?
Pardon?
Is that like crowdfunding?
Yeah. And I'm using Kickstarter. So I've worked very hard and long hours on designing as much as I'm not a graphic designer, and I'm sure there's better. I've been researching, looking at others, and some of them are so talented that some people just know how to work their way around a computer doing graphics and this and that. I'm good on social media and certain things, but doing images and so forth, I'm not brilliant. So, but even though I've had great feedback off the campaign page, so that will be launched this week as a pre-launch and then go live a week later. So that will, you'll see that on so, because obviously we follow each other on social media, so you will follow that. So yeah, that's really exciting. And the actors involved, as I've said, they're known names, especially, you know, they're all known names, but one in particular is pretty big. And he's going to play the evil mad dog, one of my main characters. So that's really, really exciting.
And which book is this based on?
Right to Kill. Yeah. There's Right to Kill, Right to Survive, and Right to Live as a trilogy, but I'm doing it as one big book because I think that's going to be easier to pitch. So please God, we get this, we raise the money, which is not a minimal amount. It's quite a lot because I want to do a fantastic job because we've got great, as I've said, caliber director, caliber cast. And there's rewards within that campaign where people can donate and come on set and have a walk-on part or a speaking part. I'm looking to do a London premiere of it because there's a particular hotel called the Courthouse Hotel, which is in London, and they're featured in the book quite heavily. I've written this book not all about marketing, but I've focused on obviously the book and the plot and the characters, but also marketing strategy on it as well.
So, and that's the hardest part.
Pardon?
Marketing is the hardest part.
Yeah, but I've done it within the book because all the titles of the chapter titles, which are many, because some are long, some are short, they're titled like the Courthouse Hotel in London, which has a cinema in. So fingers crossed we can raise the money. That is where I'm going to have the premiere. They don't know that yet.
Well, if I had the money, I'd fly over.
Hey, there we go. You know.
And promote it for.
Could have a premiere in Sydney or where in Australia, wherever you are, if it gets here.
Send us all the links and we'll keep everybody up to date.
No, I will do. So as I say, fingers crossed, we get it done. We get the money, we get it filmed, we get it done. We have the premiere where I want to invite press and TV streaming companies and hopefully it get picked up without doing it. You know, you've got to try. Without trying, you just don't know, do you?
Well, that's exactly right. And you know what? I was discussing AI with Katrina this morning, actually. And it was sad to see that this company has brought out an AI program that writes your book.
Yeah, I'm not into that. Sorry.
I know. Neither am I. And all these new authors are saying, oh, good, I can create a book by using this AI. I don't have to use my imagination. I don't have to do this. And I sort of said, anyone who uses AI to write a book is not a writer or an author. I said, I'm sorry. That's it. That's my view. I'm sticking to it.
No, do you know what? I mean, apart from it, I saw something in the news that when AI or whatever it's called comes in, there's going to be millions of jobs being lost because of this, you know. And it's what you were saying, I was at an event in London, an author event, and I was speaking to someone I know, I won't mention them, who I've met the book fair and, you know, promoted, and she promoted me. And she actually said, are you using this AI to write books? I said, no, I'm not going to do that. She goes, you should, it's really good, and blah. And I said, oh. She goes, David, of all people, you're not using it. And I said, no, I'm not going to use AI. What? I don't want to be involved in that, to be quite honest with you. And as you say, I want to write books organically, using my brain and my imagination, my creativeness.
It's weird because, you know what, I found this other AI site and I copied the first page of one of my books into this AI program. And what it does, it actually rewrites what I've written and creates the same story but differently to get around the plagiarism.
Right.
And I'm sort of thinking, okay, you know, where are we going to draw the line, or where we'll all be in court suing one another for plagiarizing other people's works because AI has transcribed it in a different manner. And it sort of worries me that we do all the hard work and then somebody can just come and knock it off our books.
Exactly. I don't know all the ins and outs of it. I mean, obviously, I know the concept of it and so forth, but no, I'm you know, I am a certain age in July, and the big one.
You'll pass that with flying colours.
Yeah, but I'm not.
Don't worry about it.
Old.
Oh, that's okay. I said it'll fly by. You won't even notice.
I'm really happy. Well, past few years, I'm really. You know, I'm probably certain things I'm not happy with my life coming up to this big age, but I'm probably in my professional, as in writer, not financial at all. I could never retire. What I'd be working or writing or serving in our family restaurant until I'm 80, I'm telling you. Yeah. But that is not the big number which reaches in July, by the way.
You know
deduct
what?
20.
Deduct both 20. Katrina and I have read your Wrong Place, Wrong Time. And I touched on this with you with another episode that recorded that never went to air. And I was surprised that that book was happened to you. That was your story.
Yeah.
And both of us were gobsmacked, well, that it was you. And this is what I was referring to. When writers write, they tend to write about things they know that have happened to them, their memories, and those sort of ideas come to them in that manner. And I was surprised that with what you wrote in that book, how did you manage to get out of that situation?
Well, and move on from that.
Like, okay, we know the ending, but how did you personally pick yourself up and move on?
I see. After the event.
Yes.
Okay, this is very interesting. Well, after the event, what happened in Marbella, I went back home, and within 4 months of coming back, this is where my head was, because you've read the book.
Yeah.
Within 4 months, I got married after meeting someone for 4 months. That is where I was. And I was actually seeing someone else, and it was a toss-up. Not a toss-up, down terrible, but I was thinking. So I went with this. She's from America. She was from America. She's still alive. She lives in England. And so I came back, and within 4 months got married. Had 3 beautiful children, who the oldest is 30 now. And my third year youngest is getting married in August. And that is really how I got through it. But I still haven't really got through it, to be honest with you. There's always memories there. And every day I think about it, because I see the book on Twitter or whatever. So I'm still suffering. Not suffering, I still get flashbacks, but I've written 3 other books, which are true stories, and I still get flashbacks on those, to be quite honest with you, because, and as you say, I knew what I was doing. I've got a good memory. You don't forget things, what particularly happened to you. I went to America and something happened there. I went to New York, something happened there for 24 hours. I went on a school trip to Switzerland. I think 4 things happened there. So, yeah, getting it down on paper, what happened to you, is very it's good therapy.
Yeah, and which brings up another idea that's been floating around Facebook is trigger warnings. Have you seen any of those?
I haven't, to be honest with you.
Oh, one woman started a feed to say that there should be trigger warnings in romance books of cheating spouses. And then everybody piles on, oh, well, there should be trigger warnings about all these other issues, especially health issues and mental health issues, with trigger warnings.
And this world is crazy.
And I said to them, I said, look, I suffer from PTSD. And I said, a leaves blowing or the ocean breeze could set me off. I said, we're going to get to a stage where we're going to have warning labels put on our books like they do on the back of food stuff, so it doesn't set us off. Okay. And the amount of people who say, oh yeah, there should be trigger warnings, and I'm thinking, oh, screw that. If there was anything major that would set people off, it would be a non-fiction book, not a fiction book where it's all made up. And a cheating husband might set somebody off, but it doesn't set everybody off. But that's modern writing. That's what happens in the real world.
People are too sensitive. The thing
exactly
is,
right. Exactly right. It's not like it comes, an allergy to peanuts. Like, that's a warning.
I'll tell you a story about that. I'm going to butt in there, actually, because I went with an ex-girlfriend of mine, I'll just say it, and we went to pick up her daughter at this cinema. She went to see, I can't remember what she went. So my girlfriend had a packet, unopened, bag of peanuts. We went in there. She was about to open the bag of peanuts. The security guard came over and said, you can't open those. And he goes, why? Because if you, you know, there's people who are allergic to peanuts, and if you open them, they could get in contact or something. We weren't allowed to open a packet of peanuts because someone might get a reaction to them without even eating them.
And you know what? It's that one person that creates the problem for everybody else. Not saying that it's not an issue for them, but when it comes down to writing, you know, come on. We write from our own experiences. And if that happened to us, then we're, you know, I'm going to write about it.
Of course, because it's a non-fiction is true. So you write that down. In my crime fiction, in Right to Kill, there is one particular scene. I mean, it's pretty dark, I must confess. I like dark. I love thrillers, dark thrillers. Give me that then to a rom-com. And even though I like rom-coms, but I do like dark. But there's one particular scene where it is very graphic, violently graphic. And I've actually put that on Amazon, you know, just a warning, this, you know, it's graphic because it is graphic. Even when I was writing it, my ex-girlfriend was my editor at the time. And she goes, you can't put this in. I said, I want to put it in. Half the things that were in there, she goes, you can't put in. I said, I'm putting it in. That is my style of writing and blah, blah, blah. But in Right to Kill, there is a very graphic scene, which I've actually, people can see. I'll put it in bold on the page.
Yeah, but I mean,
I've given them the choice.
Like men and women cheating, you know, I mean, that's a different, I mean, that's a romance.
Well, all in one. I mean, like, that is the real world, isn't it?
Like in my book,
Sorry First to say Wife's it.
Reprisal, that is based on men cheating and revenge and things like this. And the woman said, well, if I read that based on its content, I would give it a one star. And I said, well, that's a biased review because you're writing on how the story affected you, even though it says on the blurb that this book is about. You know,
she may love it. She may love the book, but she won't know because she's not going to read it.
But that's right. But it's biasing the review system just because her partner cheated on her and it affected her mentally reading about it.
Okay.
So she's going to give me a one star if she buys
because the book. Because of something what happened to her in her life, she's putting that on you.
That's exactly right. And she said, if I buy it and read it, I would only give it a one star. And I says, well, don't buy it.
No, let her buy it, earn some money from it. Listen, you can't please everyone. This is the beauty of reviews, even though that's a little bit sideways. You know, if you could please everyone, you would bottle it up and sell it. But there's some people. What can you do, eh?
No, and I said, look, I understand these sort of things may set you off, but there's billions of other people in the world who absolutely love the story.
Exactly. I said,
but you cannot damage an author's reputation
totally
by giving it a one star because you didn't like that one part. Like, my books are 150,000 words, David. I have a lot of subplot. Yeah. This First Wife's Reprisal is like 138, but The Love Mentalists are like 150. I like to add a lot of weaving and subplots and, you know, get people to think one way and then it goes another way.
Yeah.
So I said to her, I said, you know, in that 150,000 words, there's going to be something that somebody doesn't like. So you can't please every reader. But my problem with her attitude was that she will give me a one star because of the cheating in the book. And that's what the book is basically about.
Well, I will say this to you. If she puts a one star, let me know and I will reply to her on Amazon.
Yeah, well, when it comes out, it's at with Bambi Summers at the moment. She's doing the edit on it.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
No, I love her. She knows my style of writing. And this is what it boils down to. We actually have an editor on tomorrow who's actually going to blow the world of authors on publishing, like the different types of publishing and the amounts that people make, the advances people get, the costs associated with vanity and self-publishing, and like like that is an episode that people, all authors will want to read, you know, going into well, that publishing stage.
Yeah, let me know when she's on. That'd be great to hear.
Yeah, because look, we've got actually the following week, we've actually got an agent who's going to tell authors about querying and what they look at and what they don't look at, what they accept, what they don't accept. But she says she always replies to every query that comes through and will give her feedback, which is phenomenal because a lot of agents don't.
Oh, no, it's not. I mean, I get people saying, Dave, you must know an agent and this and that. It's really difficult, you know.
Oh, unless you're a celebrity.
Well, I'm sure unless you're you've been on a reality show, then you want to write a children's book or a cookbook, you're okay, aren't you, really? You know, and it's true.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, as I said on my last episode, I'm new to Facebook and all these different opinions and dogmatic attitudes, like what they say is the word of God. You believe me and nobody else. And I'm sorry. And I sort of have to restrain myself to not reply because I don't like these people. And honestly, that sets me off. You know, it sort of starts my PTSD with these dogmatic attitudes. But I have to refrain from replying to these people with their idiot replies. And it deters a lot of new writers that, you know, they have to follow these rules. And you heard my comments on last episode about the rules. I mean, who writes them? So until somebody tells me who writes them, then I will just keep writing as I do.
No, exactly. Do as write as you do. Continue.
Yeah, and that's why I say to all new authors, you know, they say, oh, you know, they've sat down and they've typed up their first page and they've got writer's block. And this happens. I don't know whether it happened to you. I mean, it never happened to me because you know I sort of have my whole story in my head. And then I bullet point it from beginning to end. But all these new authors have sitting down writing a book because they have an idea. Now, idea is not a plan. So you did your book from woe to go based on your experience and the story.
Well, the four true stories, yes. I've written a children's book and I've written eight social media marketing books for indie authors, and I promote a lot of people in them, and I love social media. People say it's toxic. If you want to get in a toxic conversation, it will be toxic. It will be. I mean, there's some comments and I would love to get involved, but I know if I get involved I'll probably be cancelled. But
that's what I said to Katrina. I said I've been muted by so many people that they don't reply anymore.
No, and I need them, especially with this fundraising. I need as many bloody, I need as many people as possible. But you were saying about the doing a plow. I don't do bullet points. I'm a very bad planner on doing my plots. I'm getting better. But when I thought of the idea of Right to Kill about an author who is financially desperate, and also actually he does, I've never had it, but he does suffer from writer's block, and what he does within the book with all the there's murders, the Avengers, there's the threat, there's that of the graphic scene, what happens in that book, which happened to the author in the book. He writes a book about what happened to him, and that book becomes the bestseller. So it's like a book within a book. And it's based on an author whose name is not even mentioned as it's written in the first person. And I came up with this idea while I was stacking shelves at my local supermarket during COVID. I had to do something during COVID and obviously earn a little bit of money. So 10 p.m. until 8 a.m. three or four nights a week at 3 or 4 in the morning, stacking shelves in on your own little aisle on your own. This is where I, and as well as talking to myself as you do, I came up with the plot of Right to Kill.
And that's a different method for you, where, believe it or not, all my books come from my dreams.
Can get that. Yeah,
and one thing, like as I said, the Love Mentalist started off with some guy in America saying pergola, pergola. And I'm screaming at the TV, it's pergola, you idiot. That's how we pronounce it. And it started me off on this American-Australian differences in pronouncing words. And that took me 3 nights to actually get it from beginning to end each night to keep progressing with the story. So after the 3 days, I had the full story down. But, yeah, but it took me like 3 months to write. But again, the Love Mentalist was something that I was getting to a stage where I was doing tours. Well, not tours, but speaking events. But COVID closed that down real quick. Yeah, so what I did in that time was I turned my experiences and my my actual show that I was going to do, I weaved it into a book. So, and now I've actually got 5 in the book that was picked up on by a publisher. So, yeah, so that was quite interesting. But I just also wanted to touch on, like, you know that I'm the founder of Authors Queries. Well, we're releasing next week a new notice board and research group. And I'm actually going to do it through Facebook, where authors, if they have a question they want answered, like I'm in Australia, you're in England, but I want to know something about New York, you know, a specific a restaurant in a seedy part of town. Now, to look that up on Google will take, what, hours? Where other authors who live in New York can actually say, oh, this is what you're looking for, and you have your answer in 5 minutes. So it's a way for all authors to do research and have other authors answer questions to save hours and hours of, you know, Googling, and Google only tells you so much. So so that's actually coming out. And also the notice board where people can actually ask for better readers and those sort of things as well. And because I asked for a better reader on Facebook and I got 5 wonderful ladies who did it for free. They only did 2 chapters, which is what I sent them. But what I'm finding, it's authors supporting authors by helping them, like giving up like, what, an hour of your time to help other authors and guide them in the right direction. So, but I'm always lost on research. Like I'm looking at a Broadway theatre. For someone who's never been to the theatre, I wanted to know what do people wear? What does the theatre look like? Are they all glass-faced fronts or are they wooden, you know, ornate carved doors, those sort of things, where somebody could take a photo for me and send it to me and I could derive my own description from the photo. So I think that's going to be very important for authors, helping authors with their research. So that's just one of the things we've brought out. So and that goes up next week.
Oh, wow, it's amazing. Oh, yeah. I love the theatre. I can give you a description if you like.
But you know what? Like, the theatres in the UK are different to the ones on Broadway.
And, yeah, okay.
And the only problem I have is what happens if I describe a theatre in UK and some, that one reader will, you know, when they read your book, they say, oh, well, that's not right. That's not what the theatres in New York alike. So it makes me wonder, as a writer, how perfect do we have to be on those tiny little points?
That's a good point, actually. I've done for Right to Kill, of all my books, actually, I Googled the streets and this and that. With Right to Kill, I did the description of the hotel, of the locations, tried to do it as close to it as possible. You're not going to get everything right. I mean, I look at books from top authors and I look at the reviews. Obviously, I start with the 1 stars, obviously. And
don't we all?
Yeah, of these top authors. And, you know, they make errors. You know, I read one review on this top book. It was actually #1 Kindle the other day. And someone wrote, the editing is so bad and this and that. It's amazing, actually, to be honest with you, what even top authors have errors.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, people slam people for editors. And as we touched in our last show, editors are expensive or can be expensive. There are others out there who are really well priced.
I was at a book signing this morning for Natalie Austin, who is a very talented singer. She was making animals out of balloons today, which were fantastic. But she's also a children's book author, and she's written these three books, which I've uploaded on Kindle, and I've got to upload as a paperback this week. And it was all about fairy sparkles, and she was dressed up as a fairy and everything. She wanted me to dress up as an elf, but I thought, but no. I didn't have an elf outfit anyway, but we were there this morning. It was in Radler at this sort of cafe, and lots of people turned up. It was really good, actually. And I took videos and images, and she's done a video of it. So that is the Fairy Sparkles, which are on Amazon. And yeah, that's Natalie Austin. So I was there this morning doing a book signing, and I've forgotten the reason why I brought that up. Why did I bring that up now?
We were talking about marketing.
Oh, yeah, marketing. So that's marketing. Marketing is, I mean, if you don't mind me going on for a minute, I go to London Book Fair, and it actually just finished a month ago. And I haven't actually been for the past 2 years. I mean, the prices have gone up, but I go to the after parties. Apparently, you know, people know that I'll be showing up for them. And they always have the same people. I'm not going to mention names, but the same people every year who are affiliated with Amazon and Thomas and Mercer, who are part of the publisher for Amazon. And they all talk about wannabe young authors. Oh, you should be promoting this and Facebook ads. And if you spend 10,000 a month on this, you'll get this return. And I'm thinking, who's got that money, especially at this moment, to spend on adverts to promote your book, which you won't get back? Especially if you've just written one. You know, people think they've written one, they'll become millionaires. It's not going to happen. They need, and when I was at one of these after parties, having a few drinks, I was speaking to people of this group, which are part of Amazon, and they probably said, who is that bloke? But in the end, they agreed. I said, you do not need these people who come in who are wealthy, who have got publishers, who are on TV coming up and saying, you should do it like this and do that and spend this amount of money. One bloke spends $250,000 a year. And they don't need that. They want someone to go up on stage to say, right, you don't need to spend any money. You can do the only, you've got so much social media out there. The only investment is your time. And that is it. And if you use the hashtags and this and that, I'm not saying I know everything, but people haven't got that money to promote at all.
Well, that's right.
And I think they should just have someone there who hasn't got any money like me, and to go up and say, right, if you want to get your book out, this is how, I'm not saying it's the right, this is how I've done it through social media, but it's also, which is very important, is to support other authors. And because it's a domino effect. If you support other authors, they will support you. They'll support you to their followers. Then their followers will support you. It's like a domino effect. And that is the way to do it without spending any money apart from your time, you know?
Well, that's true. Now, last question, because we're running short of time. Twitter and Facebook, which do you think is the best to market?
For me, Twitter, I mean, they're all really good. Twitter, for me personally, or X, has been fantastic. It really, really has. It, as you know, it is so supportive. Facebook is really, it is good. LinkedIn's been fantastic for me. Instagram has been very good. The difference between Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, say my blog, for example, is a Blogspot blog. And I'm going to say it's achieved over 1 million page views recently. But if I put that link on Instagram or Facebook, they won't allow it. It's like Linktree. You know Linktree? They won't allow that on Facebook, that link on Facebook or Instagram. But Twitter do. And with Instagram, when you do a post on Instagram, you cannot put a link within that post.
Well, on Authors Queries, we have a place where people can put all their links. So it will actually go to wherever it's supposed to go.
No, that's great. You've got to send me that link, so I can put my link.
It's sort of, like an author's directory. This is me. This is everything about me. This is where you can find my books. You know, it's sort of dedicated to the author, and it is an author's website. So, and I hope people do get on board, because as I said in my last podcast, which no one's heard yet, is that there is this big surprise that will help authors promote their books, but you'll have to wait another week or so. I don't want to give it away.
I can't wait another week. No, I can't.
I'll tell you off air, as long as you don't tell anybody.
Hey.
But the thing is that, you know, you get all these book promoters out there, you know, who say, oh, give me $50 and I'll market your book. And they're not marketers. They retweet.
The thing is, exactly. I know you said you've got to go back. I get things like, I won't say the companies, if you pay $50, you will do this for on this than one, this Twitter account, that Twitter. They have less followers, because I always check their followers. And especially on Instagram, you get, as soon as you put a thing up about a book on Instagram, you get DM straight away. They go, we can do this for you, we can do that for you. So I check their profiles, and they got like nowhere near as many followers. And you think, how are you going to promote it with less followers than me?
Well, that's right. And
I'm going to pay you to do it. You should pay me to promote you.
A true book promoter will cost you more than $50, because they do more than retweet or repost your book on their socials.
Exactly.
So anyway, we have to wind it up today. So
that was a very quick 41 minutes.
Yeah, I know. So I have to say goodbye, and we'll catch up. We'll stay on the line, and I'll tell you about the concept for Authors Queries, which is coming up. So to everybody, have a good day. And
thank you very much, David, indeed for the invite. Thank you. What time is it in Australia?
It is 8:06. Oh, no, 9:06. I'm sorry. I forgot I already turned my clock back.
Is that a.m.?
A.m., yes.
What day?
Tuesday, Monday.
I could say Tuesday. I said we've been speaking for a long time. So Monday. So it's Monday morning there now, obviously.
It's Monday morning. Yes, it is. I mean, Drew from who I did the Love Mentalist theme song to, which actually asks me, do you have any contacts to James Blunt?
That's weird. Yes.
I want him to record the song that Ethan and I wrote for the Love
Mentalist. Can I tell you a very quick story? Very yes. Quick. Okay. I mean, he's read Wrong Place, Wrong Time. We've DM'd each other on Twitter, believe it or not. But many years ago, when I was had an ex-girlfriend, her brother, this is before Blunt was known, her brother was his friends or with James Blunt. And for his birthday, we went to HMV, a record shop in London, and she had to order his first album, Back to Bedlam, because no one had heard of him. And now look at him. He's quite well known. He's done quite well.
And he has got the perfect voice for my it's a torch song to the book. So, and what I do is I actually include the link in the book, so people can either read the actual words, or they could listen to like James Blunt singing it. And it's that gotcha moment, you know, that moment that where he wins the girl back sort of thing. So I will get those details.
Put the lyrics up on social media and tag him in and say, James, hey, put music to this.
Well, the music and the words are all right. We just need a singer. I mean, we can, you know, produce together and change things. But,
exactly.
I'll send you a link to it.
Yeah, you know, it's all about, right, and I've been told this many, many, many times, David, you're such a cheeky marketeer. It's cheeky. Do it. You've got nothing to lose, honestly. No, well, that's it.
And you know what? Just to be the first person to have a torch song included in the book, just like in the Titanic at the end, you know, My Heart Will Go On. You know, it's pivotal to the story. It's really interesting the way that I've done it. It's in book two, but I just thought I'm going to get creative here and do something that nobody else has done. So, and you know what? I just put it up on Twitter to say, you know, I've got this torch song, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Ethan McCaffrey, who did our intro music to our broad, our past, he actually says, oh, look, I'll write the music. And then Drew came on and said, I'll sing it for you. But he says, I'm a good singer, but I'm not a professional. So we recorded it and we released it. But that was just something that happened on Twitter, like that's or X. But that's how the three of us got together and actually wrote it. Ethan put the music to it and Drew sung it. So, and it sort of came off. But now I'm ready to release that book through my publisher. I want it recorded professionally by somebody. And it's a good song, you know. It really is a good song. And he'd be the first person ever to sing a torch song from a book. So whether that means anything, I don't know.
I don't. So, I mean, I know singers. If you want a singer, I can get you a singer.
I want a well-named singer, one who will sell records. I'll leave that thought with you.
And you leave that with me.
Yep, and I'll sign off for now, and I'll send you the link so you can listen to the song yourself to see whether it's worth it. I think it's worth it with a professional singer. And thank you again for being on our show. And next week we have, or next episode we have an editor who's actually going to blow your mind with the ins and outs of publishing. So stay tuned for that one. It's amazing. What she gave me blew my mind between traditional publishing, self-publishing, and vanity publishing and indie publishing. The three, at the end of the day, all cost you. Even traditional publishing, you might get an advance, but most people don't make anything more other than their advance.
Yeah, well, that is very minimal, unless you are famous.
Exactly right. So stay tuned for our next episode. And again, thank you, David. And we'll see you on Twitter.
Yeah, so, thank you for the everybody. Invite. Goodbye.
Join Shanae and Katrina next week for another fun-filled, informative episode of The Bookies.